That'll wake you up. If you haven't seen Bohemian Rhapsody and you kind of like music, go see it. My wife drugged me to it a few weeks ago. I've seen it twice since then. Really, really good movie. Very well done. I thought it was kind of going to be a documentary, but it's really not. And I have to admit, I grew up during Queen. I was not a Queen fan. I knew all their songs, of course, because I played them on the radio. But it was a very well done movie. I mean, it may very well win the Academy Award. I don't know. Have you guys seen it?
Yeah, I have seen it. Yeah, that movie's been under fire a little bit the last week with their director. It's been a little bit of... I know that's not what you're talking about, but it's unfortunate because it's cost them some awards, too, which is unfortunate because it is such a good movie.
So that's the backstory. My sister and her husband are both in the movie business in L.A., and they told me about this a long time ago. This is... the director is accused of doing some things. He was... released from the movie production with 3 weeks left, so they had to get another director to finish up the movie. So they had some challenges. That probably shouldn't take away from the quality of the work, but I agree with you. You're right. It is a bit of a distraction, especially during Academy Awards season. But the music is fantastic. The acting is, oh my gosh.
You definitely recommend it.
Yeah, Remy.
Absolutely go see it.
What's the guy's name?
Rami Malek.
Unbelievable.
Freddie Mercury, does a great job.
I thought I was watching Freddie Mercury. Unbelievable. He won the Golden Globe. He probably should win the Academy Award. All right, we have a lot to get to on Inside Sports Medicine other than movie reviews. Don, good morning. You're on Inside Sports Medicine. What's up?
Good morning, doctor. I'm sorry you're by yourself. I was looking forward to saying doctor, 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 doctor.
I can replay it for you if you want.
I've got a almost 13-year-old granddaughter that's playing outdoor soccer for her school, but then she's playing club volleyball with practices right after soccer games and practices. So sometimes she's, achy and sore. What's your thoughts on anti-inflammatories for somebody at that age? What dosage and frequency?
Great question, Don. How old did you say she was?
Almost 13. In March, she'll be 13.
Right. So you're basically describing the athlete that I see in my office a dozen times a week. And one consideration is that during active growth phases, you guys have to really keep an eye on how many hours of sports are involved, because the body has a very difficult time accommodating the rapid growth, the energy expenditure that's required for rapid growth, the fact that the tendons and muscles get a little tighter during rapid growth, and volleyball and soccer and all the other things. Prior to this growth spurt, the body's pretty forgiving, 10, 11, 12, 13 maybe years of age, the body can handle a lot more than we throw at it. But once you start incorporating growth factors into that, and especially for a girl, there are hormonal effects as well. I don't think that a 13-year-old should be achy and sore and require anti-inflammatories. I think if she does, then you kind of have to back off on the activities. That being said, I'm not at all opposed to a couple of Advils or a couple of Aleves. But that should be a once-a-week thing. That should not be a daily thing. Because if it is a daily thing, then it's too much. For people like me and you, heck, there are 30 million Americans that live on anti-inflammatories every single day for their arthritis. I get it. The reward is greater than the risk. But for a 13-year-old, I think there are a lot of easier ways to manage the aches and pains than having to resort to anti-inflammatories.
Such as ice or what else?
ice, stretching. I mean, so again, when you go through a growth phase, and it's not at all unusual for moms and dads to come tell me that their son or daughter have grown 3 inches in the last 6 months. That's a lot. That's a lot of growth. And that means that the muscles are getting longer and the tendons are getting tighter. And it takes a while for the body to accommodate this 3 inches of bone growth. And so they get tighter. So to counteract that, you kind of have to teach them to start stretching a little bit because they haven't had to up until now. You know, a 12-year-old can walk out the door and play 4 hours of soccer and not stretch a minute. But as you start getting taller and tighter, I think flexibility is important. I love ice. Ice is a great anti-inflammatory, but it's hard to get a teenager to sit still for 5-10 minutes to ice their knees down. I really have to harp on this activity modification thing. You know, if she's playing 4 hours a day, that may be too much right now. Wait for the growth to stabilize. Cut something out. Wait for the growth to stabilize and then reintroduce it.
Okay, well, that's great, and I'll talk to my daughter about it. What you said leads to my second question for us mature guys. I've heard that anti-inflammatories are hard on our kidneys, so should we be cycling, you know, take them for a few weeks, lay off for a few weeks? What's your thoughts on kidney damage?
So it's kind of so that's how I do it. I mean, that's how I tell my patients, and that's how I do it. Let's go back to fundamentals. Any medicine you take has risks. I don't care what it is, whether it's penicillin or aspirin or Advil. Any medicine has risks. Anti-inflammatories as a category, they are filtered by the kidney. Well, they're broken down by the liver and they're filtered by the kidney. So in high doses, in long durations, anti-inflammatories are associated with kidney and liver failure. So, and I mean long durations as in you got to be on them for a year or 18 months, that kind of long durations. You know, a short course, and I always, at Texas Sports Medicine, I always start with 5, 7, 10 days of anti-inflammatories. Let's see if it works. In a short course like that, the risks are pretty darn minimal. So what I like to do is I like to keep them down to a minimum. You know, let's do 10 days and see if that manages your knee pain. If we have to do a second 10 days, it's sure, we'll do it. If we have to do 3 weeks out of every month, sure, let's do it. But there are 30 million people that have to take it. They can't function unless they take their Celebrex in the morning. And so you kind of weigh the risk and reward. You know, what's the risk of liver and kidney damage in the future versus I need to get up and get out of bed and go to work. So that being said, just have your doc, if you have to be on it every single day, have your doctor monitor your liver and kidney function. Usually it's reversible if you get off. So if you get off it for a while and kind of allow your system to clean out, usually it's reversible.
Okay, well, that's great. I try to avoid them as much as I can. I took them for 2 weeks here a few months ago, but then that was the only time that I've taken them for years with any regularity. You know, just gut your way through it if you can.
Well, again, you know, there's a common sense element to this, and there is a pain management element to this. But again, I'm not pointing fingers at those 30 million people that have to take it every day. They just have to take it. And, you know, if I was you, I wouldn't be worried about 10 days, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month. I really wouldn't. You know, if it helps you get over what you've got, then it's probably worth it.
Okay, that's great, Doc.
If they ever I can't go a couple of days without my Advil. Just let me tell you that. I've had knee surgeries, and, you know, in medicine, we're on our feet all day long. Knee surgeries and back, and you get old, and, you know, you got to take the stuff.
Sure. I understand. Thank you.
All right, Don. Good one. So the text machine is just blowing up this morning. I don't really get it, but I'm happy about it. Jaleesa is 30, and she's asking me my thoughts on microfracture. She just had microfracture surgery. And this is a really good question. kind of hard to do the visual on the radio, but I'm going to try. When anatomy first. All joints are covered with cartilage. There's a thin layer of white, shiny cartilage that covers the end of the femur, covers the top of the tibia. That's what your knee joint looks like. If you've carved up a turkey or if you've eaten a chicken leg, a drumstick, you've seen that cap of cartilage on the end of the bone. That cartilage eventually wears out. Eventually wears out, and it may flake a little bit at a time, especially when we get older. And when that process happens, then you kind of hear this Rice Krispies sensation in your knee. It's kind of a, we call it crepitus. And that just means that this cartilage is no longer smooth like ice. It is now a bit rough, almost like a gravel road kind of rough. But it's not painful. It has no nerve supply. There's no swelling. So that sensation by itself, you know, doesn't really bother me. And it happens in a lot of people, very common in ladies, especially their knees creak when they go up and down stairs. Once you get to the point where the cartilage is completely gone and you're bone on bone, that's when we start talking about, well, knee replacements. What are you going to do? My knee hurts. I have no more cushion in my knees. So we do a knee replacement where you replace that cartilage with metal. Metal and plastic. Now, I'm getting back to this microfracture thing. There are occasions where young people have traumatic events where they knock a divot of that white, shiny cartilage off the end of the bone. So instantaneously, a kid takes a helmet to the knee, you know, when he's playing football, and takes a piece of cartilage off the end of the femur. Well, we can't put it back. So now you've got a 17-year-old with an exposed piece of bone on the end of his femur. What do you do about that? Back in the 1940s, they developed this procedure. World War II time. Well, so a soldier has an injury. They knocked off a piece of white cartilage on the end of his femur. What do we do? Well, let's tap into the bone marrow and see if we can get the materials. They didn't even know about stem cells back in the 40s. Let's see if we can get the material in the bone marrow to grow some new cartilage. Well, guess what? Yeah, it worked. It wasn't cartilage. It was fibrocartilage, but hell, it was better than nothing. That was the birth of microfracture 70, 80 years ago. Microfracture is a procedure we still do today. We've changed the name. It used to be called drilling, because literally it was a 1/8-inch drill and you just tap into the end of the bone and see if you can tap into the bone marrow. Now it's a different instrument, but nonetheless, it's the same principle. I always tell people that was the birth of stem cells. They did not know way back then that the bone marrow had stem cells in it, and those stem cells had tremendous healing and regenerative powers. Well, now we do microfractures. If you're of a certain age and you have an acute cartilage injury, yeah, microfracture works great. I've done it on a dozen NBA players. It does not work if you're 60 years old and the cartilage is worn. It doesn't. It does not work. So I had a – do we have to go on break soon? I'm on a roll here. Okay. I had an 87-year-old that I saw as a second opinion because somebody did a microfracture on her. The reason it was a second opinion is because it didn't work. We know it doesn't work. 87-year-old, I'm not sure that there are any stem cells left, for gosh sakes. So why someone subjected that lady to microfracture surgery is beyond me. But for this text question, for a 30-year-old, yeah, I think that's reasonable. If you have just an isolated little cartilage lesion where the bone is exposed, I think microfracture is very reasonable. The downside, and it's not a complicated procedure and it's not a very lengthy procedure, and the downside is once you do that, you have to protect it. So the rehab is kind of long. You know, for the first 4 to 6 weeks, you know, you have to be on a bike or in a motion machine or on crutches, or somehow we have to keep your weight off of that area to allow that fibrocartilage to heal. During those 4 to 6 weeks while we're protecting you, you lose a lot of muscle mass. Your knee gets stiff. So when we start rehab, it's a long road. It's a long road. So I like microfracture for young people. I like microfracture because it does work and it does buy you time. But it is a long rehab. And my typical cutoff is if you're in the mid-40s or so, because then it might not work for lots and lots of reasons, primarily because you may not have a lot of stem cells left in that bone marrow. That's kind of a heavy subject for a Saturday morning. We haven't gotten to the NFL yet. I'm sure we're going to get to the NFL. Let's go to Gabe. Gabe from Fort Worth. Good morning, Gabe. What's up?
Morning, Doc. Two questions.
Fire away.
Collagen peptides are, I guess, becoming more popular these days. My wife bought us some collagen peptides to throw in our coffee. It's tasteless. We put it in our smoothies. For the kiddos, do they increase the strength of tendons and ligaments and or help heal tendons and ligaments?
You want my honest answer?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
So here's the problem. Look, if you eat meat, if you're a meat eater, then you get plenty of collagen peptides. We normally get plenty of collagen peptides in our diets. We're not deficient in collagen peptides. Perhaps if you're a vegetarian or if you're a vegan, yeah, you may be. And extra supplemental dose might be helpful, but if you have a regular diet, it's probably not going to help. Having said that, there's really no science behind it either. There's no science that says that we can strengthen our tendons and ligaments with anything exogenous. Anything you eat, anything that goes through the GI tract, is just bombarded with acids and enzymes and broken down. So, you know, this is a silly metaphor, but it's for people who have liver damage to eat liver. You know, you can eat all the liver you want. It ain't going to help your liver damage. So anyway, honest answer. Sorry.
That's okay. And then my second question is, I've always thought, and it's kind of the approach I've always taken to healing. Maybe I'm wrong, but for some reason I've always thought the anti-inflammatory approach, whether it be medicine such as Advil or whatever, and or ice, actually delays the healing process because it takes the blood away from that injury. Is that thought process not correct, or is that?
No, you actually are correct. You actually are correct.
So it's just a temporary fix to help swelling or pain.
It's a balancing act. It's a balancing act. So when I have someone who has an acute injury, like they sprained their ankle last night, I tell them to stay off anti-inflammatories for 48 hours. If you have pain, you know, maybe take Advil. Tylenol, because it's not so much an anti-inflammatory. So you're right. You're right. We need inflammation to heal. We need inflammation to heal. In fact, that's part of the healing cascade. But often the inflammatory process exceeds the injury. And in plantar fasciitis, patellar tendonitis, Achilles tendonitis, any of those itises, the inflammatory process which came in to heal the tendon is more of a problem than the tendon injury was. So we take anti-inflammatories for those conditions. I like ice. Look, there's never a problem with our body getting enough blood supply to these places. I have to qualify that. There are some places that just have very poor blood supply. But generally speaking, if you sprain an ankle, blood supply is not a problem. So if you put ice on the ankle, you're not going to compromise the blood supply getting to that injury. I like ice. I think it's a great form of managing swelling and bruising, and it's also an anti-inflammatory. You're right, but it is a balancing act.
Okay.
Great question. Great questions.
Thank you, sir.
All right, we're a little late going into the break. 855-787-1033. I don't know about you guys. I like the way the show's going so far. Just a good mix of talk and calls. 855-787-1033. 21,000 is the text machine. 21000. Start off with the four letters ESPN. Text us your questions and comments. Coming right back.